This week's episode of This Is Only a Test is made possible by Evident. Evident is revolutionizing the way personal data is shared. Their simple, secure platform lets businesses confidently know who they're dealing with without handling sensitive personal data. With connections to thousands of authoritative sources through a simple API, Evident is the only platform that enables comprehensive, accurate, and up-to-date identity and credential verifications. Check out evidentid.com/test. to sign up today and get started. Again, that's evidentid.com/test.
Hey, let's start the show.
For Thursday, March 14th, 2019, welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of tested.com. Welcome. This week we are recording on time, not early, not missing any breaking news. This week I'm Norm, and joined by a full standard cast. This is the first time in weeks we've had both to my left, the purveyor of pinball, Jeremy Williams.
Greetings and salutations.
And to his left, returning after a week off, the surveyor of science, Kishore Hari.
I've been downgraded from a sultan to a surveyor. I'm actually okay with that.
I think it's more appropriate. And also it rhymes with purveyor.
Oh, so now I'm just Jeremy's rhyming partner?
Mm-hmm. Why not?
Yeah,
who,
that sounds
who wouldn't
good
want to be
me,
Jeremy's rhyming partner?
My homonym.
Wow.
You're full of terms today.
My homonym.
Just before the podcast, Jeremy's like, you know what those little marks on the dials are called? Detents. You're just like throwing out, are you like dictionary today?
No one knows the word homonym. Now, we've all learned something.
It was a riff off of My Homie.
Oh, yeah.
Right? My That's homonym. Right.
That's good.
Right? Very good. How are you guys doing this week?
Well.
Oh, I thought that was like, well, no. I, no, well,
I'm
comma,
well.
No,
I'm
just well.
Well.
I am good then.
Doing good. Mm-hmm. Can you say where you were last week, or you just said we had a busy week traveling?
I was here. You guys recorded on a day that I just couldn't record.
Oh, that's true. I had the busy week. That's right. I apologize. I had to fly out to Los Angeles.
Secret projects?
We just haven't announced it really yet, but it's not like we're still sharing some pictures. I was meeting up with some of our makeup and special effects friends down in LA where we're filming some content with them.
When are you going to announce this project?
Oh,
like
gosh.
This month, next month, no later than the following?
This year.
Wow.
This year.
All right.
Spring 2019.
Sounds good.
I don't know. It's more about like we just don't know how it's all going to be kind of put together.
All right.
But having fun with it. Really excited. And I'm gone next week. Hey, guys, you'll need us.
You're gone GDC week.
I know.
This is
I
a
know.
Big deal.
This could be our top story this week.
Oh, my gosh.
We're missing GDC for the first time in years, if not a decade. But that is not here nor now. We are talking about this week, a week and a half of news that we're going to catch up. Now, a little bit of housekeeping to get things started. I know a lot of you out there saw Captain Marvel. In fact, it, to the tune of $153 million return in the U.S., $455 million globally, a lot of you out there saw Captain Marvel, including everyone in this room. Now, we're going to talk about the film, but we're not going to talk about it right now. We've taken your feedback, and we're going to save our spoiler-filled and some spoiler-free discussion of Captain Marvel to the end of the podcast. So for those of you just listening audio, just listen to the end. Why not? We're going to have a great time for the next hour and a half or so. But that will be at the end. And for those of you watching on YouTube, thanks. It's all for you. Any other things we should talk about before catching up, before pop culture news?
No,
or
there's
top
one
story?
Thing we're itching to talk about, so it's time to...
No good weekends? No, nothing, no big things?
No.
I had 3 hours sleep.
Top story this week.
This would have been the top story last week.
Totally, because this dropped Wednesday morning or Tuesday sometime.
Yeah. And we said in our, as we were talking with Zach Ratting last week, you know, we sure hope news doesn't drop middle of the week.
There
was. And there goes. All our worlds are colliding. Nintendo has announced Labo Kit 03. Is that right?
Four.
Kit 05. This is, first of all.
Yes.
This is just, they're committed. Like, when we put together Kit 01 and 02, Robot Kit, Variety Kit, we're like, this is definitely a fun thing, interesting thing. Is this something Nintendo's going to stick with? We saw their presence at Maker Faire. And then when they did Vehicle Kit, oh, that was a little more complex. These Labo designers getting a little more intricate now. They're having more fun with the sensors. And they're doing Kit 04 now.
Well, so what makes this one unique, Norman?
Well, this fulfills the patent rumoring that we saw from all those years ago. It's been long been rumored that Nintendo would had a patent to adapt their Switch console to virtual reality. Now,
I think somebody actually discovered it in the code as well. Like, they actually found a mode that you could toggle.
Right. And for us, you've heard us on the podcast before, being VR enthusiasts and knowing the kind of, not only the limitations, but also just the baseline performance needed for good quality VR, we poo-pooed the idea. I don't think anyone in this room
said Labo.
Connected the dots and put Labo and VR together. We imagined it would be some type of plastic peripheral that you would buy.
Right, to play VR games just with your Switch.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it turns out this could not be a more appropriate fit for Nintendo's strategy in that Labo Kit 04 is Labo VR.
Because it is experimental.
Not only because it's experimental, but because of it's not in the same way that Sony launched PSVR as a whole branch of a way to play PlayStation 4. This is feels like a one-off. It feels like, not Labo, but like the VR implementation, it feels like a one-off, and it feels very specific to the type of experiences they're designed. You're not wearing a generic headset with a generic form factor headset with a screen to let the content show. You are building out accessories that you experience in view through a quote-unquote VR-like experience.
So I bristle at the notion of experiment. Like, that's a word I like. I use a lot in my everyday life. But we're not used to the Nintendo that sends out something that's not polished anymore. It's been a long time since those days of the Power Glove and other products that came out unfinished.
The last time they did a virtual reality experience.
Yeah, what was that the was like...
Virtual Boy in like 97, 90, yeah, it was 95.
So it's like 20-some years ago. I'm a little surprised to hear you say that, because I expect, like, if they're going to release something, that it's not going to be an experiment. It's going to be good.
I don't think it's an experiment in that sense. I don't think Jeremy means experiment as in they don't know the qualities of the experience is way good. I think experiment as in this is not a new type of gaming that Nintendo sees Switch going toward. Like, we're not going to see first-party Labo VR or Nintendo VR games being shown at E3. Like, these, whatever, 4 or 5 mini games that they're going to release with this Labo VR kit is kind of what's we're going to get. Like, and they're thoughtful.
I just think of the Labo line as being just kind of a hobby, you know, to use Apple's terminology, for Nintendo. And it's, we love them. But at the same time, like, the building of the Labo is the experience.
100%. That's what we all love about it. We don't love the games.
I have the whole vehicle kit at my house, and it has not been used once since we built it. But the building of it was phenomenal.
And the games, they're essential because they are a payoff. They are the final payoff to see the integration, the fishing, to the driving, the submarine stuff. But you're right. It's front-loaded in the building.
So are you excited about building a VR elephant?
I couldn't wait to shove my face into that butt of that goose.
My worry, like, I do have mixed feelings about it. One, I love the Labo experience of the building and seeing how they work, like learning how these things use the IR reflective tape and all of the sensors that the controllers have is part of the fun. And I love that. I can't wait to see how that all incorporates into a VR experience. At the same time, it's going to be 3DOF, you know, because there's no way that thing can do 6DOF.
But it doesn't matter that it's 3DOF in terms of the headset because, and this is why I kind of wish they kind of re-embrace and own the Virtual Boy moniker, because I feel like Virtual Boy is a more apt, like this feels like a natural progression of that.
They're not going to touch the
I know. I wish they would own it. But anyway, what we've seen with past Labo experiences, even though it's 3DoF, you have multiple 3DoF sensors. It's not just the each controller is a 3DoF sensor.
When
you're stitching those together in a known linked way, whether it's for, like, again, I go back to the fishing rod being one of the best examples of it, or the steering wheel, you get more tracking, essentially.
It'll be purpose-built for 3DoF, and I appreciate that. My concern is not will the experiences be fulfilling. My problem is will they be in any way, shape, or form unsettling, nauseating for people who have never done VR before, and will this become their
100%.
Their reference.
There's two issues with that I feel like is important. There's this is marketed to kids,
right?
And we have very limited information about how well calibrated VR can be to children's faces, especially when this kit is not. What do you think the likelihood that these are going to be adjustable or use IPD in any way, shape, or form?
They're
not.
Yeah.
So that's one. Two is, and I'm surprised we haven't talked about this yet. Is the screen of the Switch capable?
So it's a 720p. You know, it doesn't a relatively low res screen, 30 hertz screen. Not even the 60, 72, 90 hertz that you need on desktop VR. And also, you don't have the
low persistence
exactly. So you're going to get smearing, you're going to get tearing. But they know this. They went into it knowing that. I assume they have catered the visuals and the designs not to stress your eyes.
So it's probably going to be a short experience then.
I think they're going to be shorter experiences. I think they're going to be more stationary. If any movement's happening, you can see the pictures, right? The one promo image that's been released so far shows five Labo buildouts, in addition to like the main kind of just Google Glass style or Google Cardboard style cardboard that you put the Switch in. But you see something that looks like a underwater camera, a space viewer, a elephant in which the two Joy-Cons are the two, there are basically parts of a trunk, right? There are two links in a trunk that you move around, and that's where some of the really cool 3DoF implementations can be, because with two 3DoF, aligned that way, you can essentially get 6DoF in that motion. Right?
Easy
get,
there.
It's not full range of movement,
yeah,
but you have more than just
right
rotation when you have linked 3DoF.
It's clever.
It's clever, absolutely. And then, of course, you have the goose that you're kind of looking up its rear.
That's what Labo does so well, is they allow you to build peripherals that are purpose-made for a specific app. So you're not using a gamepad to play every single type of game. You're making an elephant nose to play the elephant nose game, and that's it.
Yeah.
Right? So I am excited to see how that applies to VR experiences, for sure.
Yeah.
It's gonna be heavy, like not unlike the Virtual Boy. There's not going to be a head strap from what we can see here.
You're holding it in every game.
I mean, it's Google Cardboard on steroids.
But Google Cardboard is, that's true. That's true. But like the Gear VR, the best version of Google Cardboard, like had a head strap. You could mount it.
I think there's definitely comfort. Going back even further, what we talked about, the naming convention, right? Calling this VR, I think there are a lot of pros and cons for the VR community.
Sure. I mean, it's a low-end experience. It can't be compared to the high-end experience. Do you see value in constructing your own VR headset as like a utility? Like
a Jedi and lightsaber?
Wow, that's not where I would have gone. But I was thinking about there's all these build your own microscopes as a way of getting people interested in what the process is behind all of this. I don't know. I've never felt that way when I put together Google Cardboard, but I wonder about it for the kiddos.
I don't think the kids care. They just want to build something that they can put their head in. And there was more than one picture. Actually, there's a second promo image. You see what looks like the game that's associated with Saturn, the astronomy game, will have a foot pedal that you also build.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yeah, so it looks like there's a foot pedal, so it might be some type of spaceship game that you're like traveling through the stars and you're kind of like looking around as you accelerate. The bazooka game is interesting because it has some type of like cocking mechanism underneath the bazooka. So I can imagine that type of something.
Just from the cardboard design of that alone would be really interesting.
Yeah. So I think we're going to have a lot of fun building this stuff together. We have seen in past Labo versions, like the vehicle kit, there have now been third-party games that you can use your past-built Labo accessories to play their full-fledged games, the racing game. But I don't know if I see... These seem very, very purpose-built for the Nintendo experiences. And if it ends up being that, just like in the past Labo kits, we're playing the games for 10-15% of our time with this, and most of our enjoyment, the vast majority of our enjoyment, is in the building, I'm fine with that.
Oh, I'm totally fine with that. And I'm excited to see this. I'm 100% happy. I know I'm going to be happy with this. I'm just concerned about the people who've never tried VR who are going to think, okay, this is basically it. I can look around in every direction. I just can't move in any direction. And
maybe they'll want more.
Hopefully.
Maybe they'll go from this to a Oculus Go and a Quest, and it'll be like, "Where's my elephant snout? Where's my fancy controller?"
This will be the high bar.
This will be for interactivity. You don't see peripherals. That's the kind of thing that VR's been missing. A lot of the promise of the HTC Vive trackers, where you know we saw those mock-ups of those swords that can turn into the space pistols, but that really hasn't caught on. And Nintendo is giving you some physical objects to interact with that pair with virtual objects.
It seems like it might cost a little bit more too, because you'll be able to buy it as a pack or as a 3-pack. Like you can buy the starter kit, which is just the blaster and the VR goggles, or you can and then the expansion set 1 and 2.
And the expansion set 1 is the elephant and 2 is the pedal.
Yep. The bird and the pedal.
But I assume they must have a full.
They do. That's the other that's like the VR kit, you know, 04.
I feel like you just got to get it all.
I do too.
Yeah. Yeah. If you have a Switch. Again, going back to the very beginning, I'm glad that Labo has persisted. And I don't know how Labo is selling. I don't know if Labos are sitting, you know, in the corners of rooms, but there's definitely, it was a lot of excitement, and we are excited.
I want to meet the designers, honestly, because
100%.
The people who are making these things out of cardboard in CAD, I mean, that process is fascinating to me.
They must see the world, like, next level.
Yeah.
Like, just like...
Every Amazon box that gets delivered, they, like, see potential. Let me unfold the master folder. Right? Labo, the movie.
Yep.
Oh, I would love that. All right, there goes our top story. Let's move on to pop culture. Once again, we're saving our Captain Marvel impressions and spoiler-filled discussion for the end of the podcast. But that doesn't mean there's not a lot to talk about, because Netflix is doubling down on Bandersnatch.
Are they?
Yeah, I was excited when I read this story, because it was... I took it to mean, like, Bandersnatch 2 or more Black Mirror interactives. Mm-hmm. And, like... Even though I didn't, like, that wasn't my favorite Black Mirror, I enjoyed the spit out of the experience. It was novel. It was different. Here's the twist, though. Mm-hmm. Netflix came out and said, yes, we're going to double down and do more interactives. All right. And we're going to explore it in comedy and drama. I'm like, wait, hold on. Comedy? How does Choose Your Own Adventure work in comedy? No. I didn't like that punchline. Like, I don't see how that works.
Oh, right. Try to make the funniest one you can. Yeah.
Will Archie choose Betty or Veronica? Now you get to choose.
I mean, it could be dark comedy. Like, you could decide to hurt people.
I think Netflix has earned enough trust for us to check it out. But is, like, what kinds of stuff, like, what genre do you want to see this kind of interactive in? I understand it in kids' stuff. I don't know.
Part of what works so well for me about Bandersnatch is that it acknowledged the interactivity aspect of it.
Made it part of the story.
It made you part of the story.
And also, in that, it making you part of the story and the idea of multiple paths being like the theme of the episode, it allowed you to watch everything, not everything, but a lot of it in one go. The user experience from our end wasn't watching the episode of Bandersnatch, spending 45 minutes, and then going back the next night and choosing different options. They kind of designed it so you could just have a longer experience even though it was a lot more work. Is that, does that work for
right.
comedy?
That's
does
what
that
I'm
work
wondering.
For like, are you going to watch an episode of whatever Netflix comedy?
And hear me out.
Okay.
You ever see that movie Sliding Doors? It's like a bad romantic comedy mm-hmm. with, I think, Gwyneth Paltrow. Romantic comedy where you get to choose who falls in love.
No, you're the god. Okay.
Yes. Give it to me. No? Okay. No one here likes romantic comedies like me.
Yeah. 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 I think it's by nature, it's high concept. And I know they've done this with the kids show stuff, but for people who watch shows and love the water cooler moment and talking about them, and especially talking about them on social media, I don't know if you're going to get that same type of resonance on a non-genre show.
You know, but I didn't see Bandersnatch coming, though. Like, that blew me away in terms of what it did. I expected a Choose Your Own Adventure.
Yeah. They are expensive to produce.
For sure.
And the back end that Netflix built out was very customized, the delivery system. So I think they are already invested, and because they have the money to spend, it kind of behooves them to at least experiment in this. Who knows? A year later, we could be looking back and say, "Whoa, boy, that was a the use of this tech, and I'm glad we're not doing that anymore."
Yeah, are they happy with Bandersnatch because of the amount that it got watched, or because of the amount of buzz it created?
Both. I think.
You think?
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of people watched it. I mean, had the strength of Black Mirror. It definitely got the buzz, and they put more hours into Netflix, and it wasn't piratable.
That's true. My fear is if it was primarily the buzz for them, will they get just as much with the second go?
No, absolutely not.
That's what I'm
wondering. If they do it the same way, they won't.
Yeah.
But if it iterates somehow.
I'm hoping for different types of interactivity. One of the things that surprised me in Bandersnatch was the phone dialing segment where you can, it's not a binary, which make a choice.
And I feel like I feel like that was a place where they wanted to go further and ran out of time, money, whatever, to use that as a way to even
all of us play
tell a bigger story.
Video games, or used to. I mean, there's so much storytelling in video games that's in this mold that they can borrow from to create a richer experience. So I see a lot of potential. I'm actually kind of glad they're exploring different genres, because I think that's how to make it really explore the landscape of what's possible.
I hope it's not just like Choose Your Soundtrack. What song do you want to hear this person listen to?
Well, they've done that already.
Exactly. Right. But like, that would be the laziest and less exciting.
Jeremy and I would
way.
Always be like, 90s soundtrack, 90s soundtrack.
Well, we're going to talk about 90s soundtrack at the end of the podcast. Other massive news in the pop culture space. It's finally been done. As of next week, Disney and Fox will become one. Now, you
Welcome
may be excited for your X-Men's and your Fantastic Four's and your Deadpool's to pop up in your MCU, but it probably won't happen anytime soon. This is going to be a long process. This is a $70 billion purchase. The money went up from, of course, if you remember last year or 2 years ago, $50 billion was the original purchase price, and then Comcast came in and said, ooh, we'd like to buy Fox too. And they said, well, here's an extra $20 billion. How much money has Marvel movies made so far globally?
Like, sure.
21 movies?
So you figured, like, not adjusted for inflation, they're probably doing an average of around, like, $600 million in gross. And so there's been about 20 of them, 21? Where are we at?
20 films have made globally, so not including Captain Marvel, so I'm going to add $500 million on this. But the 20 films have made $17.5, so $18 billion globally, just in box office receipts, not talking about merchandise or anything.
So that's $900 million average.
Comcast wiped out all of that.
Well, that's not profit. Yeah, that's just revenue.
That's not even profit, right? So Comcast wiped out that and more with their bid. Disney spent all the money, all the box office receipts it has made from every single MCU film to just raise the price of Fox from $50 billion to $70 billion. That's how much it values Fox. That's insane. And what's even worse, though, I mean, from a business standpoint, there's going to be people's jobs at risk. Right, one estimate says that about 4,000 jobs will be cut because of this. And Disney justified this to shareholders by saying they will reduce their costs by several billion over, you know, however many years because of efficiencies, which just means they're cutting jobs.
You suppose they're going to keep the Fox logo and the whole
the fanfare?
Company, all that, and they'll just be two different
studios? Yeah, two different divisions. It's going to be really weird to see a Disney logo in front of Deadpool.
Yeah.
Is there anything you're most excited about with this merger?
Content-wise?
Yeah.
Not really. That's the thing. I think Fox is doing fine. I mean, they might not have been great, but they obviously have had their successes with Deadpool and some of the X-Men films. But they were taking risks with things like The Martian and Aliens and you know, to a lesser extent, Predator. But risks, nonetheless, right? And I think Disney is a company known to play it a little safe with the releases. The expectations are definitely higher now that all this money is spent on those characters. And we go back to, you know, what Sony has done with Spider-Man. I kind of wish the relationship, if we wanted to see Wolverine in the MCU, I wish it was more of a Sony relationship where they still had the rights, can do what they want, put out a movie like Spider-Verse, but then also share the characters.
I just can't wait for that third reboot of Fantastic Four. The series, the film adaptation thing, no one can get right.
I always liked that. I don't know. Was there a cartoon or something? I knew about the Fantastic Four. Cartoon.
Fantastic Four. Yeah.
There's been
Reed
two
Richards
cartoons.
Richards is elastic.
Yeah, I thought
Sue
I was,
can
I
hide
like that.
From sight.
I'll bring
Johnny's
it. I think it needs
the human
that.
Torch.
Okay, thank you.
The thing just loves to fight. Call on the four. Fantastic Four.
Nicely done. I did not know that.
Jingles. I want to see Fantastic Four on the big screen. I do not want to see them played safe the way that some of the Marvel cosmic movies have played safe. More Guardians, please. Style of filmmaking. Anyway, that's going to happen on March 20th. That's soon. I can't believe it's going to happen in a week's time.
It's like next podcast.
Yeah, yeah. More Disney news. Last week, Zach was here. We talked a little about Galaxy's Edge finally opening its doors to some press. Nerdist got to do a big tour. Got to see some extra video that has been released since. And now we have opening dates.
I don't think we did talk about that last week.
Yeah, we did.
I don't think so.
Yes, we did.
We did?
Nerdist did a tour. We speculated about
you definitely
the turn
about
through
it last week. We did?
On the Falcon. We talked about
the
excitement for the dark rides in Galaxy's Edge.
And they knew the opening date then?
No, we did not talk about opening date.
Because that's what I remember learning.
That's my
later
segue.
In the week.
Okay. Yeah, so the opening date for both the Galaxy's Edge West Coast and East Coast have been announced, and sooner than anticipated, May 31st in Anaheim, Disneyland Resort will open Galaxy's Edge, and August 29th at Walt Disney World. Now, let's get all the jokes out of the way. It'll be very packed. We all acknowledge that.
I mean, these are excellent dates if you want to go elsewhere at Disneyland and Disney World.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. I mean, I think that's going to be good. That's a silver lining if you can enjoy it.
This soft launch, it's a weird kind of scaled in launch. Like, not everything is going to be open May 31st, just like a couple of the rides. Like, the whole land isn't necessarily going to be completed. By the way, I'm going to Disney World in 2 weeks on spring break with my child. And so I'm going to like try to hop a fence and get arrested.
People are changing their vacations to move away from those dates because they think it'll be too impacted.
Well, wouldn't that be funny if no one's there?
That's not going to be the case. Come on. It's peak.
You've seen the promo photos. There's only 10 people in the
whole thing. Exactly. And they're all flat and cardboard and they're all, you can never see their faces. And
yeah.
We're excited for, I think the time to go, if I was going to go, well, obviously, I want to go as soon as possible. But if I was going to book a vacation, it would be probably toward the end of the year.
The Monday after Thanksgiving.
The Monday after Christmas?
No.
No. No, he's right.
No, I mean, I want to go after, I want to go around the time episode 9 comes out. Because I think hopefully by then they'll have episode 9 stuff there too.
There's two typical drop offs, but this one won't have one. So, like, right after Labor Day. Crashes because the kids are back in school, but that won't happen because this is opening like August 29th.
Well, Force Awakens, whatever the episode 9 title will be, that comes out December 20th. And I think like right after New Year, like January 2nd is pretty dead time for Disneyland. So.
There really is no dead time. There's just slightly less busy times. And there's always getting a whole day pass and actually trying to go after the fireworks, maybe, you know, when the kids are heading out, might have a little easier of a time. I wonder how long the lines are going to be. You know, if there'll be fast passes for everything that you want to ride.
Book now. Book now. Book now.
Oh, man.
Weirdly, I think everyone is talking about the Millennium Falcon ride, but I am weirdly more excited about the Rise of the Resistance. Like,
that's what I said last
week.
Yeah,
I think like a darker ride is totally interesting.
That's the animatronic dark ride. You're in the it's a more traditional Disney style. You're in a moving vehicle that goes between rooms and doors open and you kind of peek in through the hangar. I'm way more excited for that. From Star Wars to Star Trek, we have some great news. Long in the making, a Deep Space Nine documentary called What We Left Behind is now going to be released slightly wide because it has found a distributor. Shout Factory has acquired worldwide release rights and will bring it to multiple platforms, including a theatrical release. Now, I know, Jeremy, there's time for you to catch up.
Let's focus on Kishore here. He's very happy about this.
I'm thrilled about this. So thrilled. They actually still have a little work to do. Like, the movie isn't finished, from what I understand. Like, they still, like, it's gone through iterations. There's still some more work to do. But Jeremy. Jeremy, this is the opportunity.
I've tried.
You haven't.
No, you didn't.
You watched the pilot.
I watched the episode you guys told me to watch. What do you want from me?
You know what we should do? We should bring him in when Worf comes in.
What do you? Oh, yeah. I think you meant like Michael Dorn showing up at Tested to shoot something.
No, we should. I think a good time to watch would be when Worf or come on, you got Chief O'Brien. Don't you like the Chief?
You know what? If Chief O'Brien's the best they got,
this is not far from the best they got.
Oh, you did not just hate on Chief O'Brien near St. Patrick's Day. What happened?
You will not have any of it.
But you see what you're doing. You're trying to link Next Generation to DS9 for me.
Yeah.
And that's like the best you got is Chief O'Brien? Like, if it's as good as Chief O'Brien.
No, it's Worf. Worf, the full story of Worf.
The full story?
You get the full story of Worf, Klingons, Klingon Romulans.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
Wow. Are you sure that you are objective about this?
Like, yes.
Okay. Are you sure that it's not just because Next Gen was gone that you appreciated this show?
I watched Next Gen in reruns.
So I have two responses. I'm 1,000% not objective about this, and it doesn't matter.
I know there's a lot of love for DS9. I appreciate that.
It's well deserved.
It's one of those that, like, we don't actually see a lot of behind the scenes, and there's a lot of drama behind the scenes. So I'm hoping this doc kind of picks up on it.
What does it mean, what we left behind?
It's
the name of the final episode.
Yeah, it's kind of crucial phrase in sort of some of the closing
story. I'm getting chills.
Really? Well, nerd chills.
Now, Next Generation, I think, from my perspective, and you probably universally agreed, had one of the best finales of not just any Star Trek show, but of any long-running genre show. All good things is tough to top.
That look he gave the crew around the poker table at the end is one of the best delivery, like, acting moments.
He should have done this a long time. Mm-hmm. He should have done this. You chills just thinking about that. But the end of Deep Space Nine was a culmination unlike any Star Trek show has had.
Really?
A culmination of not only a season, but of a series, of a part of that corner of that world. And in terms of world building, Deep Space Nine did it much more.
How many episodes were there?
Seven seasons. So about 100.
135.
Asking me to devote 110 hours of my life to watching this in order to appreciate the final episode.
Your kid won't regret it.
Please, okay. Well, you won't get to the visitor in season 4. As a parent with a son, you're going to come babbling into us about how that just reframed your entire parenting life.
I appreciate this.
Yeah, to put in terms that Jeremy can appreciate. Yeah, as a father. Okay, I think that does it for pop culture news. We got to move on to tech.
Does? Holy cow.
Yeah.
All right, let's do it.
This is a story that could be in both pop culture or tech. It's, of course, of streaming services, because Apple.
It's Showtime.
It is. Well, maybe, depending on the deal they can make with Showtime or HBO or not. But March 25th is the Apple event, Steve Jobs Theater in their new. You know, I was flying back from L.A. and I saw
the mothership.
The mothership.
No way.
At night, and it looked amazing.
It looks super cool. From a plane.
At night? At night from a plane.
Oh, yeah.
I took a picture from
There's like a big white circle just like surrounded by nothing. It's really cool looking.
No way. Wow. Yeah. Did the captain say out saw your right window?
No.
No.
Wow. It's through the fog. It was just like a halo on the ground.
Both really cool to look at and a weird testament to the area of excess. But anyway,
they're going to have an event there March 25th. Everyone expects this to be the debut of their streaming service. They got to get out ahead of Disney Plus, you know, get the people to sign up. Now, the other expectation is that they won't have their shows ready for launch.
They're going to have if they're doing an announcement, I don't think they're going to have celebrities going to show
up. But I don't think their shows are the ones that they've paid a lot of money for. Like, it's not like when Disney announces Plus and availability, they're going to have like Mandalorian release dates. I think the idea is they have content partners, and that's why the latest talk is that they're trying to lock in HBO, lock in Showtime as partners for this, for some type of bundle deal. But I do think it is trying to get ahead of the other elephant or the mouse in the room, Disney Plus also launching this year. Now, Apple, what they could do is they could give everyone 6 months or a year free.
No.
They would have the money to do it.
They have the money, and they've demonstrated never giving away anything
this
for free.
This is bigger than Apple Music.
You remember how big of a deal it was when they had to give away free cases?
True. Absolutely true. I think they see the potential in this business being like making up basically for their missed opportunity for buying Netflix, right? Like, you know, this is a Netflix size potential business, an HBO size potential business. I think that they are, and it's true, Apple comes in not necessarily as the first to market, but they come into a mature market and try to dominate. But they're kind of at a disadvantage here. Oh. They don't have proven content.
No, kind of.
Right? They have Apple TVs everywhere, but they're kind of, as you've seen with Apple Music, iTunes being on other devices now, they need this to be more on than on just Apple TVs. I could see them saying that anyone with Apple TV gets 6 months or a year free.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Like anyone who's
bought into the
hardware
ecosystem.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea.
Put their credit card, and then 6 months down the line, they'll charge you, you know, month to month.
It flies in the face of the new ideas posed by Elizabeth Warren to break up a lot of the big companies, including Apple, speaking mainly of their app store. But now if they're going to start creating content for a platform that they also own, then that will also be a problem.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it can't be something that's going to be exclusive to Apple devices. They need a bigger market than that. What makes this Apple is the question. Right? What their last forays into content with their app contest show with Will.i.am was a disaster. The original content with Apple Radio One, I don't think that's caught on really as a thing. So what's going to make this different other than content partnerships? Like, are they going to do a live component like they did with a radio station? Like, are they going to have a live channel that you tune in?
Beats One.
Right, Beats One, but Apple Broadcast One, whatever, Video One.
What would that be? I mean, like MTV.
Bring back the VJ.
MTV.
Bring back the VJ.
Did that well, but that's short-form content that does not exist anymore.
Bring back Own It Carpool Karaoke, that kind of stuff. Fun Ellen-type videos.
Will there be a user-generated content element to it?
Like, I absolutely don't think so.
Yeah.
100% not. I mean, maybe this will be the walled gardens.
So it's not YouTube. It is Netflix.
Not YouTube.
Yeah.
100% premium content. Only. We'll know more April, March 25th, right? Not April 25th?
March 25th.
Yeah,
March
25th. End of this month.
Yeah, I don't know why someone put April 25th in the show notes.
Yeah, who did that?
Yeah, March 25th.
I mean, you know what? I could totally see not subscribing to this personally. I am way
What if
more...
they gave you 6 months?
Well, obviously.
See, there you go.
Well, what? I mean, yeah, like when
what
Amazon...
What if they gave you 6 months and then you watch, you binge those shows
Amazon
and you're
does,
like...
Amazon does that with Prime. Like, they'll give away Prime memberships to loyal members for X number of months. But I honestly, like, what are they going to have that excites me? I don't
know. Here's what's going to happen. Oprah's going to walk on stage and go blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And then, like, freaking Jon Snow is going to show up and they're going to talk about HBO partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to be like, this streaming service is $20 a month. And
why
then you're
would
not going to do it.
Why would HBO do that? They have their own service. Why would they cannibalize that?
They're not cannibalizing it. They'll just come out there as like, you can get HBO added on to this service. beyond the original content. Like, HBO is all about upselling integration with other streaming services. So I think that's what
this is. This is them bundling with Comcast.
Yeah. They're going to...
But this is not Comcast. This is Netflix or Amazon Prime.
So here's the question. Have you reached a point in the a la carte saturation where people feel stressed out about the need? Because you're doing it through Apple iTunes subscriptions anyway. Like, I look at my iTunes subscriptions. I have CBS All Access. I have Criterion Collection. I have HBO. All bought through Apple, right? Could this be them taking a step back and saying, our thing isn't going to be another Netflix or Hulu that you buy a la carte? Except we are now doing Comcast, but better. We are doing the four subscriptions you want, you know, Showtime, HBO, plus our original content at a reasonable $20, $30 a month. High value, high cost, but this is the catch-all, kind of like the catch-all bucket. Because we're not in a post-a la carte world, but we're in like a mature a la carte world. Where bundles make sense now.
Yeah. You know, I just hope there's something more to it than we're trying to do this too. We're trying to do Netflix too. You know, I hope that there's some interesting synergy between their devices and this service. Maybe there's some sort of voting mechanic or interactive mechanic that
Bandersnatch does not work.
That one
on these
Netflix
devices.
You know, maybe you can do more than that. Or maybe there's content that is a little more I don't want to say highbrow, but like, you know, educational than the other guys are doing.
Well, you heard what HBO had said about Netflix, right? HBO's president stepped down, long-running president, because that's after the acquisition of AT&T, and they now have a new CEO. And the new CEO, one of the first things he said was, Netflix has no brand. And I don't think that's, you know, the case. The Netflix brand is clearly very strong. The people kind of associate Netflix with convenience, associate Netflix with just a plethora of content, a backlog library of content. It is in the pop culture consciousness of Netflix and chill. But I do think what he was actually saying is that Netflix doesn't have a brand identity, a content identity, because they're so all over the place. Yeah. When you think of HBO, their tagline is not TV, it's HBO. They are the home box office. It is premium quality only, even in like the risks they take, things that shows that might last one season, but from Band of Brothers to Sopranos to The Wire to Game of Thrones, it is high quality, risky statement prestige television. Kind of they establish that. Netflix, some hits, some not. Definitely a lot of throwing stuff at the wall. Apple, I think, wants to be more like the HBO model than the Netflix model.
I don't know
how they're producing content.
HBO model is in decline, and I think that's why the president left. I think Game of Thrones will be one of the last water cooler shows in our experience, like ones where everyone is watching at the same time.
Westworld?
I don't think Westworld is that.
But that's not indicative of the moment we're in now and people, the way people consume the separate content. That's just indicative of the content itself. Like Game of Thrones, yes, it came out at a great time for HBO and for streaming services, but that's not to say there's not another brand or, you know, whether it's Lord of the Rings on Amazon or a Marvel thing on Disney Plus, that there could be these other big water cooler moment TV shows.
Yes, but not in the everyone is watching at the same time.
Because Netflix does a binge watch, everyone downloads, and HBO is a week to week.
Well, HBO is also on cable, which is still where I think most people are watching Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and I wonder, isn't Apple going to have a weekly thing? Because HBO has had success with kind of a weekly programming in the John Oliver mold, in the Bill Maher mold,
real time,
and Netflix has not had success.
Curb,
with that late night talk show, with a kind of news show, with the thing that you're going to check in that's not a narrative driven programming. Will Apple have their equivalent of that?
Right.
Will Apple book talent? Because Netflix tried it with Michelle Wolf. I mean, they've had success with Patriot Act, but the Chelsea show, not really going anywhere.
I'm curious. I'm just pessimistic. And it's
the burnout.
The one thing is, like, this is that thing that was in the book, you know, the Steve Jobs biography, where he said that he spoke to Steve Jobs before he died.
We solved the problem. We solved the TV problem.
Jobs was like, I know what to do with TV. I know how to solve the problem. And then finally, we might be able to see the evolution of whatever that idea was.
I don't think this is that idea. I think it's whatever like, problem that Walter Isaacson had talked to Steve Jobs about all those years ago was probably a physical TV. And I don't combined with some type of package deal. But I think the world of streaming that we see exists now is probably grew out in spite of the Jobs vision for how they were going to own television, for better or worse. In other streaming news, Hulu has now packaged themselves with Spotify. Now, in terms of bundles, this makes a lot of sense, both for Hulu and for Spotify. Spotify is trying to grow users. Now, anyone who has a premium Spotify subscription will now get Hulu with the ad-supported Hulu. That was like $3 a month Hulu for free. All you got to do is go to your Spotify account and check the box, say, I want Hulu, and you get Hulu for free, which is great for those people.
I was in a beta version of this where it was like an extra dollar to get Hulu. And then they just said, like, this is working.
Yeah.
Does it work? So, go ahead.
It was kind of perfect. So my wife watches Handmaid's Tale, which is too scary for me to watch.
Does it work the other way around if you have a Hulu account?
No.
No, nor does it work if you have a Spotify account through a previous bundle. Like, I have Spotify through a New York Times subscription, and so I do not get Hulu with that. But that type of bundling of different types of content, you know, Spotify moving into podcasts, obviously having a big library of partnerships with record labels, that paired with a TV thing, I think makes a lot more sense than putting, you know, Prime Video and Netflix together.
I'm going to predict it now. 2020, the year of streaming consolidation.
What does that mean?
Because right now
we're back to cable companies?
No, we're in this like, everyone is building their own channel.
Yeah.
And like eventually that's going to get to a point where the profitability of it is going to wane, and then we're going to see consolidation back.
Yeah.
Like I subscribed to DC Universe for a month and it was super worth it. I loved the stuff I watched on there. I can't be a regular subscriber to it.
Yeah.
And so I can't imagine that channel's going to survive.
Do you see it being more of an a la carte, you buy the show? They tried that with iTunes, and you still can do it with iTunes. It's just that from a business standpoint, that's not what any of these companies want.
Nope.
They want you to be they want you to live in that little area. They want you not to think about the $10 a month you're spending on this and just that have that be built into your credit card fee. For the price of just two coffees a month, I'm not drinking coffee, I guess, for the whole month because I'm subscribed to so many of these services.
It is the new winter is coming. Consolidation.
It's hard, though. It's hard because you have to compete with the perceived value of your competitors. And Netflix has tremendous perceived value for what you're paying for it.
And you only got so many eyeball minutes.
And it's like they're profitable. Like they're not cheating like, you know, the ride sharing companies are where they're, you know, pricing.
Are they profitable? Is Netflix profitable?
Yeah, aren't they?
I think you're right. They're not cheating like the rideshare companies. Yeah. They're not valued $1 billion because they took $1 billion in fundraising. But anyway, let's move on. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. To you out there. To you in here. To everyone on the internet. This could have been our top story this week, but the internet turned 30 this week.
How do you mark the beginning of the internet?
It's the 30th anniversary of Tim Berners-Lee submitting a basic concept paper for building the World Wide Web.
Cute.
It feels like the internet's been older than that. It's weird to acknowledge everyone. Certainly, everyone in this room is older than the internet, but there are a lot of people who are younger than the internet who did not exist in a world that the internet did not exist, and we all grew up in the world in which the internet was being developed. And have been working on the internet. Tested has existed almost one third of the internet's life. I've been working on the internet for two thirds of the internet's life. That is a weird thing to say.
Yeah, that's weird.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. And your websites, you've had a couple versions of it.
Yeah.
It used to be like pretty raw HTML.
Yes. Yeah. Front page. Microsoft front page. What are the big notable things on the internet? Well, the internet's very different.
Notable thing.
The Verge did this incredible story that was highlighting some of their favorite sites from the past.
Yeah.
Present and, past and present. That's it. Do you have a favorite that you miss?
A favorite.
They highlighted stuff like, obviously, like the Internet Archive is great with the Wayback Machine, GeoCities, which we're all have a certain kind of fondness for.
Flickr.
Oh, old Flickr.
Old Flickr, I miss that, for sure. The way people used it. not the way it's being harvested now for facial recognition data.
I just miss, well, honestly, like, and no one's going to sympathize with this, but I miss when websites were coded by hand. Like, I miss HTML, and that's it. Like, tables. Mm-hmm. And as soon as, like...
And the whole thing would break if you missed that, like, closing the table cell?
Yeah. And then, like, you had to, like, you know, obviously you had to tailor, and more browsers came out, you had to fix little bugs that happened with each browser, but, like, when it, I miss animated GIFs, and that was it. Like, it's so complicated now.
We live in a pretty GIF'd up world.
We do. It's all GIF'd up.
You know, the actual thing I miss, like the predate of the social network, is the old bulletin board systems where you would like interact with people through like text interfaces.
I mean, like BBSs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dial up.
Yeah.
I miss the idea of people sharing websites as memes, like the actual URL and a landing page as like a thing to share.
You don't do that anymore?
I do that. You don't do that?
There are no novelty sites anymore. You know, people aren't discovering new websites on the internet. Like, oh, this homepage of this guy, this is awesome. This funny video you post. Like, everyone is just on other people's platforms. Right? People are sharing other people's Twitter or their Facebook page or their YouTube page.
Right.
But not their own domains. I miss the idea of people owning their own domains and putting things on their websites and web hosting. You know, hosting their own servers or using server hosting services. Now it's just... easier to put it on a Tumblr or a Medium than to own your own website. And I think that's because the way the web has changed, and now it's, you know, the web is mobile. The web is through APIs. It's not through landing pages.
I'll give you a site.
Yeah.
Everycircuit.com. I discovered this recently. It's a place where you can design and simulate circuits, analog, digital circuits, for free. Put them up there. Watch your circuit go. See the current flow in different directions.
Nice.
Turn on LEDs. All virtually. There, you got what you wanted. You're not
all right.
You're not super happy about that?
No, I am happy.
Netflix is profitable, but not by much. 100 million or so.
That's not by much.
No.
It's based on how much they're spending and how much they're worth. Okay, moving on. Last week we talked about, did we talk about the Model Y unveil event? We did.
Yeah, it went to From Sex to Sexy, remember?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, in the midst of all the Tesla news last week, you know, there was obviously their announcement that they would be closing all their retail locations and moving to an online-only sales model and cutting prices across the board for all their cars. Well, apparently, people didn't like that. Which people? Tesla owners. Tesla owners around the world, and I think probably it's a cultural thing, especially over in the Far East, protested over the fact that there were price cuts on the cars.
Why?
Because they had purchased cars previously.
Wait, so they're upset that the new owners would pay less? That's the only reason?
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
What about the closing of the retail shops? Did they not like that for any particular reason? Like they lose those
people
charging
didn't
options?
Care about that necessarily. Obviously, from a consumer standpoint, it sucks. People are losing jobs, but also the ability to test ride a car, pick up a car at a lot.
Yeah.
Like... Well, Tesla's rolling that stuff back.
Okay.
They issued a press release earlier this week saying that they're going to only be closing half as many stores as they originally anticipated, probably because of leases that they couldn't get out of, maybe. That's the speculation. So some of these stores will still be open, probably with fewer employees, but as showrooms, as places to test drive, and in some rare cases, as a place to pick up a car if you want to buy it on the spot there as opposed to having it delivered, which is tough if you're not in the Bay Area. In the Bay Area, it's easy to get a car from Tesla delivered because they make them here, right, the Model 3s.
I have a hard time believing this, like that people would complain. That has to be a very vocal minority. That has to be a very vocal minority.
So people complain about everything.
I do want to talk about this because I think it's absolute like BS that the attitude is such a entitled attitude.
Now, hold on.
It's precious.
Dude, let's rein it in. I think it's a small number of people that are just being loud about it. Most people who I know who drive electric cars of any kind are just happy to see more people driving electric cars.
I would hope so. But Tesla stepped it back. It did enough that they not only took fewer stores away, but the prices went back up. The prices are up by 3%.
By 3%, that's
across
right.
Across the board, except for the entry-level Model 3.
The 35K.
They made that promise.
Yeah.
They're going to keep it. But everything went up by 3%. And it's a bad look. It just looks like they didn't know what they were doing.
It does look like that.
It looks like, I mean, regardless of their efficiencies in manufacturing, how good the cars are, from a business perspective, that kind of like that kind of backpedaling does not inspire confidence.
I mean, fine. That's probably true. It doesn't bug me too much because it seems very much in Tesla's character to do that. They're constantly...
And maybe that's what people are complaining about, the fickleness, right? They're complaining about, well, what does this mean? And a lot of it probably is in reaction to the price slashing of features that people have not received yet and had paid full price for.
Yeah, that's odd.
Such as full driving, which got, you know, renamed and all the features realigned. I mean, from my perspective, I didn't pay for it, and now it's $2,000, a couple thousand dollars cheaper. I might even pay that $2,000 mm-hmm. and get the full driving when it comes out. But people treat Tesla less like a car company and more like a technology gadget company.
Great.
And that is weird.
I'm
I wish, because Toyota, Nissan, the prices are fluctuating all the time. Dealerships change their prices all the time. You know, the subtle change between the models. I think the obsessiveness that some of these owners have with this brand is a double-edged sword. They're devoted fans. They will back whatever Elon does and trust him and as investors. But they will also feel entitled to scrutinize and critique any type of normal business practice, such as price cutting.
Fast forward me 3 or 4 years when electric cars are more of a commodity. That's
I think we're looking forward to that. We're absolutely looking forward to that.
I drive a Bolt, so I'm not in like the
You're the Hufflepuff of electric cars.
Yes, I get it. I'm not in House Gryffindor.
I think the Leaf owners are more of the Hufflepuff of electric cars.
What am I?
Hey, you're Ravenclaw.
Yeah, I think Ravenclaw.
Very thoughtful. Yeah. Wisdom. There's a wisdom.
Yes. Yeah, definitely not Gryffindor.
So I appreciate that I'm not in Gryffindor. At the same time, when I'm on the road and I'm behind a Leaf or a Tesla or in front of, there's a sense of fraternity.
Do you do like a little nod as you're driving by?
The Model 3 salute.
No, I don't get that. Obviously, that's just for Gryffindor. But if there's a patience level, there's a forgiveness level that I appreciate.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to change the subject.
That's
here.
Very precious.
But I'm pretty sure that that Norm's in House Slytherin over there, not Gryffindor.
Ouch.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there is no house appropriate for Tesla owners. Maybe it's divided between Model 3 and Model S owners. I don't know. speaking of stores closing, Amazon is closing stores. They had stores. Well, they had pop-up stores.
What?
I never went to it.
Well, you've walked by it at the Westfield Center in San Francisco. That's the place where they sell the Kindles, and they had to sell the Alexa.
Alexa's vending machine?
No. The big kiosk in the middle of the second floor.
Oh, yes.
Well, they basically have walls. They weren't really pop-ups because they were just like not established full retail outlets. They were just they had no windows, but in terms of mall sense, this is as permanent as you can get. It's like a sunglass kiosk in the middle of a mall. So I wouldn't call them pop-ups. They are closing them.
Does this include the Amazon Goes, those like automated ones?
You mean the stores?
Yeah, the stores.
I don't think
I don't think so. Yeah. And those, they could be expanding. That seems like are test beds for what they want to do with Whole Foods eventually. But their pop-up stores, they were rethinking the retail strategy. They had 87 of these, and they were up for a couple of years, and they're going to discontinue them. I think it shows a maturity in their devices. Obviously, they are a logistics company. They can easily get the amount of units sold at these devices is minuscule compared to what people are buying online and what they can get off trucks.
Mm-hmm.
They still have the Amazon Prime truck, you know, that's going around. The Prime Now truck and for people to pick up whatever.
Yeah.
But awareness of these devices, they're commodity items. Kindles, these the smart assistants.
You're saying they don't need them anymore.
They don't need them anymore. People know about them, right? Yeah. I think when they were trying to sell the advantages of having these in your houses. But at the same time, they have more of these devices. If anything, the showroom model works well for this because now they have clocks and microwaves.
Have they re-released the clock yet?
They have.
They
the clock
did?
Is out. The clock is
They've
back on
re-released
sale.
It.
Yeah, the clock is back on sale.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wonder what they fixed.
I mean, presumably the problem.
Yeah, but what about me?
Oh, sorry.
Do I get a firmware update or do I have to buy a new clock? I guess I'll find out. I'll rehook up the subwoofer and let you know.
Yeah, the clock, as I believe, of course, searching Amazon clock does not get you what you want. Where is it?
You don't have to do live Google searches.
I'm not going to do live Google search. That does it for technology news?
No.
No?
What? No.
What?
Why can't we talk about the most pressing issue in technology today? The fact that Inbox is shutting down at the end of the month.
Oh, because I'm in denial.
You don't understand how much stress this is causing my family.
Look, I love this app. I get it. Like, every day I have to hit the dismiss, like, Gmail, it has all the features you want. No, it doesn't.
Do people, I mean, obviously people know because they're getting that announcement. Why isn't this on the front page of the New York Times? Why isn't this trending on Twitter every single day? Like, I have tried to use Gmail for the past 2 weeks, and it sucks. It is horrible compared to Inbox.
And you're not talking about when Gmail went down last night.
No.
You're talking about the Gmail
app. I'm talking about
app.
The tabbed experience with ads at the top of my tabs and losing track of what tabs I've read and which ones I haven't and having to archive things in a weird that doesn't make sense, takes more time. The Inbox experience is so superior. Why is it going away? Is it because the ads don't work as well there and that Google's not making money there? Do they really need that ad revenue? Can we do something about this?
Don't we have new segment music for this segment? Like things that make Jeremy upset?
Oh my gosh. We got it. We're episode 491. We are 9 episodes away from 500. I think it's time to play the music.
Oh, I don't have it queued up.
Oh.
Okay, next week though. This is just a preview of the things that
irritate Slack.
You.
Click the link in Slack.
Yeah.
You can play it. Let's hear it.
Well, it's not just like that. It takes time.
I'm gonna filibuster while Jeremy gets us ready. I never used Inbox. I think Gmail is just fine. I think a lot of the smart features of Inbox have moved to Gmail. The ads don't bother me.
Really?
Like
the ads bother me.
Do you use the tabbed interface?
I don't use tab interface.
So you got it all in one. But don't you like the way Inbox collapses things into segments? And like, so you get all your spam in one little pop open, and you can archive everything or delete everything at once.
No, I like seeing everything.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
it's the worst.
I like the control over it. I'm a masochist.
Wow!
I check, you're part of the problem. I feed the email habit when I'm feeding.
I also feel like Gmail doesn't handle multiple inboxes as well as Inbox did.
Yeah, that's true. The inbox management, the folder management in Gmail sucks. The kind of labeling system is not great. But what can you do? What can you do?
All right,
here we go.
Things that annoy me.
Now, we actually had a couple different submissions. There's another submission from SoundCloud. Go click the other one. I want to play the other one, too.
I don't have that one. Can we do that one next week?
It's in Slack.
All right, you want me
as
to
well.
Do
it literally is a SoundCloud link that I messaged you in Slack.
This has gotten out of hand.
Because I want to appreciate the fine folks out there who listen to the podcast and create music for our segments. Like, you guys really make our day. So even if we're
so
not going to use, even if we don't use it all, I want to let people hear the work they've done.
All right. I appreciate the work they've done. All right, and it's loading, and here we go.
And you.
My God, that was loud.
Hold on.
Bring it down a notch.
All right, here we go.
This is live production here. All right, so how do we, refresh?
Yes, refresh.
All right, here we go.
You have to unmute yourself.
Here we go.
Think we're good? Here we go. Things that annoy me. Mm-hmm.
So they're both good.
I appreciate the second one for the Mario Day tie-in, but I think I'm going to go with number one.
Number one is
more in the spirit.
Of being irritated.
It's more concise.
Yeah. Yeah. But thank you. Thank you. Who created that second one?
Mark.
Thank you, Mark, for making that. He's created other music for our show.
Dr. Daft created the first one.
All right. We're going to go with that first
one. Do you want one? Do you want one?
Yes.
All right. Well, look, these are obviously, there's going to be short little things. And
are you going to pull them from your notepad?
I know one. So it's you know, I apologize if these are things that you guys are all over already, but just maybe you can help me understand why this happens. I'll give you one this week. Why don't people back into parking spaces? Why don't people back into the garages? It is This drives me crazy because it makes so much more sense to back into a parking space or back into a garage or back into a driveway. And people don't do it because they're short-sighted. They don't do it because they're thinking in the now.
Isn't the time commitment the same?
Because the time commitment not the same.
It's not the same because
it requires more effort. It is an investment now to pay off later, to easily pull out of a spot later.
Safely.
Yes, more safely. But I would argue that if you are going someplace, being on time to get somewhere is more important than leaving somewhere, presumably not in a rush. People are more in a rush to get places than they are to leave.
But we're talking about a matter of seconds, right? We're talking about maybe 5 extra seconds to back in. Now, granted, I have a backup camera, right? I have a 360 camera.
You have one of those top-down 360s.
And it makes backing into places remarkably easy.
Of course.
But I've been backing into places since I had my first car. Like, this is in the 90s, when there wasn't such a thing as backup camera. Stick shift, and I can do it, and I did it, because it makes so much more sense. And there's people who pull into their driveway or into a parking space, because that's the easy thing to do when you get there. But then it's time to leave, and they're in the car, backing out. They can't see anything. They can't see any pedestrians are walking by. They can't see cars coming. If they would just back in to begin with, when they had a much better vantage point on the pedestrians that are walking there because they're driving down that road, they have a sense of where people are. They back in then. When they pull out, they've got full range. You can see everything.
You know, I did not know what to expect from the segment, and I can tell you I am not disappointed. I am not disappointed.
I'm retracting my Hufflepuff claim, and this feels a little more Slytherin. No.
Your is 100% valid, what you're saying.
Okay, good. Thank you.
I think it's...
That's gratifying, although you're not answering the question.
I will not concede that is a thing that people will do or should do.
But you don't think it is? How could it be valid and not a thing people should do?
It's valid in that I can see why it bugs you.
Oh, I see the logic behind this, but I'm a terrible driver, so I'm just going to keep doing it the way I do.
You pull in forwards?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yeah. The only time I pull in backwards is when I need to charge the car.
It's because you're uncomfortable pulling in backwards?
Yes.
You're afraid you're going to hit something?
More uncomfortable pulling in backwards.
But what about when you go to leave? Aren't you afraid you're going to hit something?
I've been doing it my entire driving life, and so I'm more comfortable doing that. I completely agree that driving out, facing outward, is much easier than backing out, that three-point turn of backing out and pulling out of a parking spot or a garage. Also, in many places, the parking spots are diagonal, and it's not possible to pull into a diagonal spot.
Granted, there are exceptions. I feel like this is one of those times when I might feel superior to people. You know,
this is gold.
But that can't be possible because I have too much. What is the thing that's not Homo sapien? It's the other thing, like where I'm 2% of this other
Neanderthal.
That's it. I know that from 23andMe. I'm like more Neanderthal than most people, so I can't possibly be superior. But how is it that I back in and no one else does? So this bothers me. That's it.
This is great.
Right. That took a weird turn to like a misunderstanding of biology in addition to like...
All right. That's it. That's it for this week.
All right. Oh, my God. I hope it gets better from here. This is amazing.
All right.
Speaking of biology and some science, let's move on to...
Don't you have something to say?
No. Let's save it for Captain Marvel.
Okay. Very good. All right. So we're going to do that. We're going to go there. And then click this.
Now it's time for a moment of science.
All right, two stories this week. They're both kind of serious, so I'm going to try to represent them quickly, but I want to note just off the top that both of these are complex issues that deserve a lot more attention, so I'm going to try to put some links where you can learn more. There is a new diagnosis in this country especially that has become in vogue when you go to the doctor's office. Oftentimes when you get blood work done, they test for sugar levels to see if you are diabetic, particularly type 2 diabetic. Recently, the American Diabetes Association change, the ADA changed the level of sugar in the bloodstream that qualified for something called pre-diabetes. Have you heard of this diagnosis going around? Like people are quote unquote have a sugar level that's pre-diabetic.
Yeah.
It's becoming like common parlance right now.
Because there's like a pre-hypertension, like that's an existing thing.
Yeah. So this is interesting because there's I want to get this number right, but I believe it's something like 10 to 11 million Americans that have diabetes and so forth. That's a combination of type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes. But up to 84 million Americans, if I'm reading this right, it might be a little less than that, qualify as pre-diabetic based on the new scale that is measuring this now. And so this doesn't change anything except the calibration of the scale has now changed. Like what qualifies for being quote-unquote pre-diabetic? It's important to note that only 2% of people that are pre-diabetic actually go on to develop diabetes each year.
What percent?
2%, according to some recent studies that have been done on this, per year.
Yeah, yeah.
So that aggregates higher as the years go on. Yeah. So there is like some sort of cumulative effect. But we don't really know how many people are actively progressing over a long period of time from these pre-diabetic conditions into diabetes. Now, if you're at the higher end of the pre-diabetes scale, you have a higher likelihood of progressing to diabetes. But there's this whole like big swath of people that are at the lower end of that sugar rating that are pre-diabetic that will never develop type 2 diabetes.
If you're diagnosed with pre-diabetes, can you make a diet change in order to affect the outcome?
So the number one thing you can do is make diet and exercise changes. Those are super effective. Like every doctor is going to say like, that is a number one change that you can lower your sugar level, and mm-hmm. it has multiple benefits to your life. But there is an industry popping up of prescribing medication for pre-diabetes now. And a number of studies and some guidance came out this week that is very risky because there's always side effects to medication. And right now we don't have a lot of evidence that pre-diabetes is a real quote-unquote thing. Like it's like a potential risk factor, mm-hmm. but it's a risk factor that's better managed by diet and exercise than it is by
sure.
medication at this point. There's a lot of reading to do here. There's a lot of gaps in our sort of data and information. But as you hear that term pre-diabetes, I'm just hoping our listeners take like a skeptical eye towards that, because I do think there's some angles here for developing medication when we don't have a lot of evidence that that's the right pathway. Now, I'm not offering medical advice in this segment. So everyone is probably in different situations, but I thought there's some interesting long reads about this. And I don't think anyone has like nefarious intentions in this whole debate.
The drug companies don't have nefarious intentions?
Well, they want to make money, but I don't know if I call that nefarious intentions. And there's probably a segment of people that are pre-diabetic that are highly disposed to developing diabetes, which has a significant impact on your length of life. But treating all people that fall into this like pre-diabetic range the same is probably not the right course of action. All right, we're going to talk about something that you're not really supposed to talk about on online these days, which is we're going to talk briefly about vaccines.
Why is this everywhere?
It is everywhere.
This was on the news. This is Neil deGrasse Tyson's latest topic on his podcast.
Yeah. So I have sort of a couple thoughts, and they're going to come sideways at this. So one of the reasons it's a big issue is because we've seen declining rates of vaccination here in the U.S. and worldwide. The WHO listed vaccine hesitancy, which is the official term for people that do not or are considering not vaccinating their kids on a consistent recommended schedule. They named it as one of the 2019 global health threats of the year. So that's like not messing around. Like that's yep. the World Health Organization. They're mm-hmm. really seeing potential outbreaks and current outbreaks of vaccine-preventable diseases in ways we haven't seen. In Madagascar, there's been measles outbreaks. There's been measles outbreaks here in this country. There's things returning to the fore that are preventable. That's fine. That's one part of the thing. That's not fine. It's like it's part of the discussion.
Yeah.
I think a lot of scientists especially take this issue very personally. Like, this isn't just like a rejection of the vaccine. It is a rejection of like expertise, like that this is like a thing
yeah.
that has been developed that has saved millions of lives.
Yes.
And so it's a personal issue to a lot of scientists. I want to acknowledge that too. It's a deeply personal issue to the people not vaccinating their kids.
And it doesn't fall across any party line. That's the interesting thing.
No, and like there's all sorts of stuff about people that are more educated actually have a higher potential of being vaccine hesitant. There's no sort of like geographic ideology. Mm-hmm. It has so much more to do with values and beliefs. And there's a lot of striation in why you could be vaccine hesitant. You're not vaccine hesitant for one reason. It's like it's basically a ton of reasons. One, you could be distrustful of the medical system mm-hmm. or healthcare. You might have personal family members that have health conditions, or like your children have health conditions that are unexplained.
You might have read something on Facebook.
Yeah, you might have community members that you trust that express these views. I bring it up because a lot of the tech companies have been approaching this topic under a great deal of pressure from government and from vaccine proponents to change their policies. So YouTube has changed their algorithm so that they're not going to surface as much anti-vaccine content that's not evidence-based. Same with Facebook. Pinterest just deplatformed the anti-vax stuff. I personally... I've been reading a number of papers on this topic. There's a link I'll put to an online Twitter discussion among scientists about vaccine hesitancy and just sort of the complicated issues underneath it. I think this is one of those things where there isn't this easy right or wrong answer. Like, it's easy to send out a tweet being like, more people should get vaccinated. It's less easy to say, like, there's actual people on the other side of this decision that are not making it because they don't, for just completely illogical reasons. And I think there's a lot more empathy and a lot less focus that needs to be drawn to this in order to actually make movement. In like hyper-polarized environments where there's a lot of attention, where it feels like life or death, it's going to drive people further apart.
I know in some states there's a clause that allows you not to get vaccinated, not to vaccinate your children for philosophical reasons.
Yeah.
And some states are getting rid of that. So yeah. That's one step that can be taken.
There's also a lot of evidence that mandatory vaccination policies, while they make short-term changes, those people that don't want to vaccinate their children or are hesitant are not positively impacted by that legislation. They aren't making better decisions, health decisions, based on that.
Sometimes it's about the greater good, you know? And not having your child vaccinated is not just about your child. It's mm-hmm. about other children that they could infect.
So that message, which I totally believe in herd immunity, is one of the messages that has the least potential impact to move people
mm-hmm.
that are vaccine hesitant. They don't give a shit about herd immunity. They care about what's happening to their kids.
But the herd does.
Yes. Yeah. And so, like, I'm just suggesting this isn't an easy thing to be like, I am pro-vaccine. Everyone has to get vaccinated. These policies are in place. Or we need to deplatform X people. It's much more complicated. And there's a lot of great behavioral science research out there on this topic, on what's been tested, what works. And I encourage people, if they want to have legitimate conversations about this with family members, with loved ones, with people in their community, to read up on this stuff, because it has been studied and there's been stuff that's proven effective that works. And a lot of it starts with just a measure of empathy between the person that's hesitant.
Fair point.
And I'll leave it there. I just want to acknowledge that this conversation is going on, and the tone of it, I think, has we have an opportunity to change it.
I see you put something down here.
I'm a pinball nerd. Pin. Just to my point. Finally, pinball. That makes me very happy.
Oh, wow. Well, the link you put down does not work. But I have a feeling I know what it is. The Williams. Did you put this down? You put it
in the show notes.
I did.
Was it last? I think we might be rehashing last week's news.
The Pinball FX update?
I don't think we talked about that.
We did not talk about this last week?
I don't know.
I think we did.
Did I mention the three games? I don't think I knew the
three games.
Last week.
Yeah.
So the Pinball FX volume, Williams Collection Volume 3 is coming out later this month. And if I recall, they are including three games. Champion Pub, Theater of Magic.
Oh,
which
that's
is
a good one.
It's
that's
a
classic.
Really, yeah,
that's
really
classic,
good one. Yeah. Great John Papaduke game. And what is the third one, Kishore? What is it? It's not...
I'm only a surveyor of science. I'm not the purveyor of pinball, so I don't know.
I forget. Anyway, there's a third game. These are great. These are the guys who make Pinball FX and, you know, Zen Pinball, but they've revamped their physics engine entirely, and they're remaking all the games that the Pinball Arcade guys were making back when they had the license. Now they've appropriated it, and they're making all their own versions. And if they would just bring it to VR, the world would be perfect.
Theater of Magic, Champions Pub, and Safecracker.
Oh, yeah, Safecracker. Pat Lawler game. His last game that he made for Williams. That's a weird game. You guys know that game?
No.
It's a different size game. Like, they made a completely new cabinet for it, so it would a little bit smaller, so it would fit into narrower places. And you obviously, you're cracking a safe, and you're trying to escape. But the neat thing about this game is, if you beat it, you get a token. Like, in the actual arcade, you'd get a physical token that would drop out of the head and roll down the playfield glass.
Wow.
And it would land on you. You'd catch it. And if you could either keep that token, there's a special like Safecracker token, or you could put it back in the game and you play a whole different game.
A whole different, wait, a whole new game?
Whole new game that you could only play with that token.
So is it different play field? Or?
Yeah, no, obviously the same play field, different
okay.
rule set.
Got it.
Different rule set
got
entirely.
It. Okay. It wasn't like another board or anything.
So it'll be interesting to see how they emulate that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. We are running out of time, so let's go to a VR Minute real quick, and because we got to talk about Captain Marvel.
The VR Minute, virtual reality this week.
As a quick segue from pinball to VR, we will be covering an update to my pin sim, the pinball VR game
controller.
Interface controller, in this week's episode of Projections. We're going to record it after the show. It'll be up later this week.
Yes. All right. Nice teaser. Big news in the world of VR. Valve had a big shakeup. They had let go of 14 employees working in VR, but Gabe Newell responded to an email from some concerned VR enthusiast and said this was unrelated. This is related to personnel issues, not related to their future hardware plans. And Alan Yates had said something to the same effect, that they are not out of VR. So Valve is still in VR, but the people working there, not the same people. But as long as I think Alan Yates is still there, I'm happy. I'm good. We played a little bit of Racket Fury, which is an Oculus Go game.
It's on Rift, too.
It's on Rift, right, but the Oculus Go now is multiplayer. And
yep,
so
as is the Rift, though. So that was released on both platforms. So they now have multiplayer. You should only be able to play against bots.
Right.
And now you can play against other people. And it's fun. Like, we were on Go, and that game has always done a good job of doing the best impression of 3DOF hand controls.
It's kind of like a Cloudlands mini golf. You know, like, it teleports you to where you need to be.
Right.
And then you're kind of rotating your wrists. But both of those games, you can have nice, enjoyable simulations yeah. of the real-world experience, in this case, table tennis. And it's a nice little social. Latency is good.
That's what it is. It's a social experience. It's not a pinball simulation, but it is fun.
Yeah.
Or, did I say pinball?
Yeah.
It's a nice ping-pong game.
Yeah.
Not a simulation.
Yeah. You can still do some spins. You know, they're still gaming it, you know, knowing the way to hit a ball,
mm-hmm.
timing. It's a timing game. Recommended. Vacation Simulator, which we saw last year at GDC, now has a release date.
Not too far off.
When is it?
I forget. I'm clicking the link. Do you know?
I'm also. Why are we both loading this at the same time? April 9th. April 9th. April 9th. Will this be published by Google?
Right. Or, I mean, who needs a publisher these days?
Right? Or is it under the Alchemy Labs banner?
I think it's still Alchemy Labs, or just a part of Google.
Well, yeah. You're never going to book deal after that.
No, I mean, it's just interesting that they have a VR department at all and
right.
no Sixtoff headset.
Yeah, yeah. True. Although Google will be doing some type of announcement. They just hired Jade Raymond as a VP for something related to gaming, and they'll have some type of announcement at GDC. Although everyone assumes it'll be some more traditional console-like gaming thing, because there's a controller
mock-up. The Quest is still, we think, on track to come out this year in the spring, and John Carmack has confirmed sideloading on the Quest. Content and applications will apply the same as in the Quest that is on Go, which is great news for people, developers, and consumers.
Sure.
And so that's good.
It's not exactly a matter of plugging it into your computer and dragging and dropping, no. But it is good that you'll be able to put things on there.
Exactly. I think we talked about Beat Saber Music Pack. They have a music pack coming out. I think
it comes out today.
Yeah. Yeah.
As you're listening to this.
3.14, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, my gosh. We're missing the Tesla Y event. That's tonight as you're listening to this, but tomorrow as we're recording this. So I'll talk about it next week. I won't talk about next week.
You phone it in.
I know. Next week, also GDC, and we expect lots of VR at GDC. New games, of course. We hope that Quest will be there, and
We know it will be there.
We of course. It's got to be there. It's first appearance, public appearance since Oculus 5, and a lot of rumors and speculation as to whether Oculus is going to also announce something else. The Oculus subreddit has been guessing at what else Oculus could be announcing, and a lot of people think that Oculus might be putting out the Rift S as well.
You know, the Oculus subreddit is really Rift S hungry. They're always looking for, hoping that there'll be something. Like, there was a thing where you couldn't buy the Rift. Like, it was out of stock. Right, and everyone was like, oh, that means something.
Right.
And then everyone got restocked.
Exactly. And then, of course, the latest thing is that the @Oculus Rift Twitter account said that just 1 week away is GDC. Stay tuned. You won't want to miss this. So why not just tweet that from the @Oculus account?
Hey.
So reading into the tea leaves, we'll all know soon enough in a week's time or so.
Knock on wood.
Yes. And that does it for a rather short VR Minute. Kept it almost a minute, but let's now finally move. Oh, no, before we do that, I do want to thank the other sponsor that made this episode of This is Only a Test Possible, and that is TripleByte. Because applying to programming jobs sucks. You have to put in the right keywords in your resume. You spend hours and hours on phone screens and take-home projects, and that's assuming the company even responds to your application. Well, if you're a software engineer, TripleByte can help. They work with over 400 top tech companies, from big names like Dropbox and Adobe to exciting startups. You do one brief online interview with them, and if you do well, you get to go straight to final interviews with the companies on their platform. It's like the Common App for software engineers. TripleByte does not look at your resume or where you went to school. All they care about is whether you can code. Because it's not about a lack of credentials on your resume, it's all about whether you have the skills. And in whether it's in coding or in many other jobs, we feel like that is really important. So apply now at triplebyte.com/test. That's TripleByte, B-Y-T-E, byte as in 8 bits. And for special listeners of This Is Only a Test, if you get a job through TripleByte, they'll offer you a $1,000 signing bonus. It's pretty sweet. So thank them for making this episode possible. And now we're going to talk about Captain Marvel. Incept our way back up. We don't have 20 minutes. We might have 15 minutes. Let's talk about Captain Marvel. We're going to go spoilers in, right?
How much do you need?
We are full spoiler.
Full spoilers.
From now on?
Yeah, why not?
Wow.
Fine. The one spoiler for you, did you guys like it or not like it?
Yeah, I liked it. Yeah, I liked it, man. Did you like it, Kishore?
I thought it was okay.
I liked it a lot. I did not love it. I don't think it ranks in the top 5 Marvel films.
It does not. My official rankings indicate that it does not.
I've seen the rankings. It does not.
Okay. We're not going to get. We don't have time for those rankings today. But Kishore did put up a spreadsheet in our Slack. But where do we not want to go?
Okay, spoiling?
Let's go to the spoilers. Jeremy, this is our chance to answer your questions.
Oh, my God.
Let's
no,
do it.
This was the 90s movie you've been waiting for.
No, it wasn't.
No, it
that's,
wasn't.
I think
that's
that was
the
my,
thing.
That was the thing. I think they made such a big deal about this being a period piece, the first trailer, her crashing into a blockbuster. And I felt like it was very superficially 90s. The one thing, and you can, I know this is not like the right way to critique a film. You can always, everyone's going to always want different things.
Yeah.
But the thing I had kind of hoped for is in the 80s and 90s, there was a preponderance of kind of like alien fish out of water stories, from Starman to E.T. to even the Hulk Hogan one.
So you wanted that style of movie?
I kind of wanted that style
of
movie.
I like that. Like Stranger Things kind of thing.
Right. Where it was like, if you're going to make a movie set in the 90s and you have this awareness of like that type of like alien on Earth looking
X-Files.
Human, right? And like you had all the beats of it too, the alien on Earth, alien quote unquote on Earth, but like meeting people, kind of fish out of water, hijinks, buddy comedy, and teaching, leaving the people that they've interacted with a better sense of the universe, right? Sam Jackson, Nick Fury comes out of this with awareness of the universe, and that's why he creates the Avengers Initiative. Like, I kind of wish tonally it had taken that tact, but that's just a personal preference.
I like that. No, I'm with you on that. That didn't occur to me. I thankfully had completely forgotten about your total spoiler explanation of the difference between the two races.
The Krolls and the Skrees.
Yeah.
The Krees and the Skrulls, sorry.
Yes. Like, mm-hmm. So if I'd remembered that, I would have known about the twist. And I thought that twist is one of the best parts of this movie.
I was even surprised by the twist. And I knew the source material.
How were you surprised by it?
So in the source material, the Skrulls are just villains.
Yeah.
The Skrulls are straight up like elvish villains.
Really?
They're asparagus-looking schemers. And the first half of the film, I've only seen it once, but from what I recall, they are never explicitly shown to be villainous. You're only told that they're villains by the Kree, by the propaganda, by Jude Law's character.
Wait. Villains. So who's the shapeshifter?
The Skrulls.
Skrulls.
You're okay. Right. Yeah. Right.
Right. The refugees in the comics, they are villains. They are infiltrators.
Really?
The first, what I loved about this film.
But you can assume they're not, because Jude Law becomes the bad guy.
Well, yes, that's the twist. The two twists in the film is the true villain is Jude Law,
mm-hmm.
and not even the Kree as a whole. Jude Law, that's a military jerk commander.
For the good of all Kree.
No, the real villain is the military industrial complex.
The AI, the Supreme Intelligence. And the Skrulls being refugees is a huge twist on how they're portrayed in Marvel's comics.
So, oh, that's interesting.
I love the execution of the twist because I was surprised by it. And casting Ben Mendelsohn is the best way to twist that.
Yes, because he has been typecast as the villain
of
villains.
That's so funny you say that because my 12-year-old son leaned over to me. And like I have a strict rule against talking in movies. But he leaned over to me and he said, "It's funny that he's always the villain." And
right?
then he wasn't
ready. Ready Player One. He played it off funny too,
yeah.
Right? Like he kind of had like nefarious intentions. Obviously, he did like a mind probe on her, which in the beginning of the film, very Star Trek. Like they're like Romulans essentially,
yeah.
Right, on those ships. Go ahead.
I do think they missed an opportunity by having them be binary like that. The Skrulls are good, Kree are bad. They're missing an opportunity to have a more complicated film, which would have been better, that they're both bad.
Mm.
And you only get one taste of that when Talos says, you know, I have blood on my hands, or it's been a messy, whatever he says.
I'm scarred from battle as much as you are, yeah.
So I think that's a missed opportunity, and it makes the setup, if the Skrulls are going to be in future films, a little harder.
Yeah, I mean, there is a little bit of gray area. Even among the refugees, right, there could be Skrull that have more nefarious intentions, right? Just because Talos wanted to find his family doesn't mean that he's also representative of the entire Skrull species either. Mm-hmm. I love the makeup. I love the portrayal. I love that they had Ben Mendelsohn in playing mm-hmm. like him conveniently.
That part didn't work for me because I knew that was him. You know, if I didn't know him as an actor, I would have thought that worked better. But in my mind,
did you know
like,
him as a Skrull that was the actor?
Yeah. Because I knew his voice and I could see his mannerisms. But so when I saw him, I was like, wait a minute. Like he's impersonating somebody who looks like the actual actor. So that broke the illusion for me. But besides that, it was fine.
That's a false-wall filmmaking thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I agree. The costumes look good. The de-aging held up. Except,
oh, my God.
Coulson
was not that great.
Was
Sam
not that
Jackson.
Great.
Believable.
100%.
The whole way through. The only thing was like, you know, he was not moving with the spryness of a
That was interesting. So they actually had Sam Jackson doing the running, you could tell. I felt like the first scene with him seemed a little rougher than the rest. Maybe I just got used to it. But when they first introduced him at the phone booth, I thought, oh, this is not as good as I hoped.
Well, maybe it's because he was in bright sunlight.
Maybe.
And like that wasn't the lighting the rest of the way.
So what I loved was that this was a completely untraditional origin story. Almost in the Thor vein.
Mm-hmm.
She has the powers going into it. She has, you know, her journey is that of a soldier discovering her humanity. And it wasn't like she was on Earth, then on Kree, then back on Earth. They just start off with her being on Hala,
mm-hmm.
which I love.
Very sci-fi.
Yeah, yeah. It was very cosmic. I love that Ronan showed up again, although I thought his makeup wasn't nearly as good. I mean,
he needed the war paint.
He needed the crusting on his face, but it was a little bit of dialogue.
Where do I know Ronan from? Is like Guardians.
Guardians. One. He's the villain in Guardians. This is him as the
number six the movie fanatic. On my list.
I like the Flurkin. I did not like that they need to use the Flurkin as a comedic beat to explain the eye scratching.
Do you remember me texting you? I was at the movie theater and I took a picture of the cardboard cutout. I said, "What's with the cat?"
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you know at that point?
Oh, yeah.
The cat. That was a good payoff. I thought that was a really good
payoff.
Wait,
you knew that was a Lurkin?
A Flurkin.
Flurkin.
You knew that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's in the comics.
That's Goose.
Oh.
So. I think that screeched of answering questions we didn't need, like in Solo.
Oh, yeah.
Of like, I know for the sake mean. Of like, just like, but, let him have some mystery
but
to
when,
it.
No. When he starts the movie off with no eye patch, you know from that moment that you're going to find out why he loses his eye.
They hot tub time machined it almost.
Yeah, but like, I kind of enjoy that because it deflated.
I mean? Like they just kind of like teased at it the whole way, and then it became such a afterthought.
But I think the whole lead up to this film, people were speculating that it was going to happen. So I thought it was a good way to deflate that whole thing.
They were speculating that that's how he would.
No, that we're going to find out how he lost his eye.
Right.
In this movie.
And it was such a funny, trivial thing.
Yeah. Come on. Goose was the star of this movie. Goose just killed every scene.
No, I was on board with that too. I thought that was hilarious.
I thought the way they portrayed both the Kree and the Skrull being afraid of the Flurkin
and knowing,
was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was definitely delightful. It was a funny movie. There were lots of jokes. I don't think every joke landed. She definitely had a very confident, sassy personality.
But Brie?
Yes, Captain Marvel.
You know, Brie Larson's acting for me in this movie was not the highlight. Like I always felt like, and this happens with a lot of Marvel films, I feel like I'm watching people acting as opposed to watching somebody believing that they're the character.
I wanted her to be a little more brash. Captain Marvel is kind of a brash. I think like it was just short of that. I thought her acting with Maria Rambeau
was really good.
Yeah. Is that her friend?
That friendship.
Yeah.
Because
I
thought she was the best actress or actor in the entire film.
She was great.
Yeah.
Got to give a shout out. Like, no love interest. Thank God.
Yeah.
There was no love interest.
Mm-hmm. Besties.
I
love that. I didn't even put it together because Maria Rambeau, you know, the co-pilot, her wingman, her daughter is...
Yeah.
Monica. The time. So
what
in the
mean?
Comics,
her call sign is clue
yes.
to the future.
In Marvel Comics, the Captain Marvel moniker there is passed around. There are a bunch of Captain Marvels, and the Captain Marvel Carol Danvers is one of them. I like the clever Veers naming.
That was new to you.
That was new.
That was new. That was clever.
And for this film, I mean, it makes so much sense, but. It definitely was a nice little surprise. But another Captain Marvel in the comics is a Monica Rambeau, and it is the daughter. And because this film is not like in the comics, it's set temporally.
Wow.
They have that distance. It's the daughter of the friend. And so all those moments where Maria Rambeau's daughter, you know, talks about idolizing Carol and holding her flight jacket and that role model relationship, that will pay off.
That's cool.
Definitely.
It'll pay off in like 10 years or something like that.
No, it'll pay off like next year or whenever they do Captain Marvel 2 because presumably it's all going to be set in 2018, 2019, 2020 and she'll be
she'll be older.
She'll be older. Oh, the time stuff works.
You're right. I didn't think about that. That's brilliant.
Nicely done, Norm. Good work.
Who's a Skrull?
Yeah, right. So this is where are you coming from? You got to introduce this because I didn't think of this.
We got to wind up. I have one last thought. I think the place this movie missed being great is you're supposed to, like, all the great Marvel movies have, like, a jump out of your seat moment where the character, like, assumes their mantle, their fullness of a superhero. And we have that set up for this moment when she gets her full power. And I think it just, like, missed the mark there. It didn't set up, like, her falling down and being a beaten down character on Earth enough.
You're talking about
she just got her memories back. Right before.
And
if that paid off, this movie would have been great.
When she discovers that the thing on her neck is not an activator, it's an inhibitor.
Yeah. And so, like, when she assumes her full power and comes into, like, her light, it doesn't pay off because those memories haven't really been with her very long.
Yeah. The whole thing happens in, like, 2 days. And I kind of wish there was a little more time to breathe there. It goes in the same way of like the world building of the 90s. I felt like wasn't fleshed out enough. It basically happened in a strip mall, right? And a little bit of the subway of LA. I thought the action beats were great. The music, I felt like the most 90s it got was the soundtrack choice. And
Blockbuster.
By the way, well, yeah.
True Lies.
So
right stuff.
You want to hear a funny thing about the right stuff? Absolutely. I love that.
Yeah, the double VHS box.
Yeah.
Smart.
The True Lies bit. An anecdote from the directors is that originally the True Lies thing came at the last minute. It did come out that year, and so timing was right. But what they originally wanted for that standee was the mask. Jim Carrey's The Mask. Okay. He has his green head, yeah. And she would have thought it was a Skrull.
Oh, funny.
But the studio would not give them the sign-off.
So they killed Arnie.
So they killed Arnie instead, and Arnie was a good sport about it. The other thing, of course, the mid-credits standard. I think one way to evaluate this movie is, like, obviously it is a standalone movie, and it's a non-origin story, an introduction to a character. But one way, one metric I gauge it is in that mid-credit stinger when they had the appearance in presumably Endgame, whether that moment paid off, right? And it did. Like the moment she appears right behind Black Widow, I was like, oh, this is going to be so cool, right? Because like, I then realized I had built enough of a relationship with this character over the past 2 hours to have that convergence of her meeting the Avengers be an awesome payoff. If I didn't feel that connection, I feel like that would have felt...
I agree.
See, I left thinking that was completely unremarkable because it didn't reveal anything. Like, we know that's going to happen.
But it revealed the moment.
Yeah.
And the anticipation.
But I'm with you now.
Like, oh, my God.
It's right. We didn't need more... We don't need more at stake for Endgame. Half the universe is gone.
But don't you like it when these little in mid and post-credit stingers reveal something new?
Well, now they don't have to do, like... meeting Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Like, you took 5 minutes out of the next movie. Which
exactly.
Is awesome.
And the way she said, where's Fury?
Yeah.
That just said everything. Like, that bond she built with Fury, yeah. It paid off.
And you know the answer to that, and she doesn't yet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's so good.
One last thing before we get to your question.
I gotta go, but let's go. Let's go.
Intro to this movie with the Stanley tribute. No, yeah. Perfect.
Yeah.
Caught me totally by surprise. Freaking bum, no bum, perfect.
Bum, was bum, that bum. All of his cameos? Or just was it just all cameos?
All cameos. Yeah. And then his second cameo, which I think they did some additional shooting for her glance smile back at him, I bet was a pickup shot.
Yeah.
But of course he is reading the Mallrat script.
Yeah.
And that's just wonderful as a just a meta awareness.
Tesseract hairball, did that work for you?
At the very end.
Yeah.
So apparently another insight from a director is that was a last minute scene that came in. You know, the Flerken has like a parallel pocket dimensions in its belly.
Oh, I know that.
So one of the other alternate scenes that they would have shot for a end credit stinger was where Von Ragg, the Jude Law's character, ended up, and because he gets blasted off in the little escape pod,
back
to Hala,
back home,
and what they toyed around with him getting out of the escape pod, and he would be on Sakaar.
Oh, funny.
What is that?
Thor Ragnarok.
Oh,
that planet.
I like that idea.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, are you fighter? Or are you food?
That's good.
Right? I think both of those work. Tesseract, I think it's a nice tie-in. If you don't follow the history, Tesseract was, of course, first appeared in Captain America, the First Avenger. Ironically, Captain Marvel really is the First Avenger. And Tesseract pulled out of Odin's safeguard, Asgardian safeguard, protected by Norse worshippers. Red Skull picks it up, powers the army, and then that gets... dropped to the bottom of the ocean. Howard Stark picks up with a tiny robot at the end of the First Avenger, and presumably that gets held on by S.H.I.E.L.D., where they don't know how to exploit it until Project Pegasus, which you see now in Captain Marvel being developed by a Dr. Larson, played by Annette Bening, who is Captain Mar-Vell, the namesake of Captain Marvel. In the comics, that's a man, which everyone thought Jude Law was playing, but they twisted it up and made that a woman. And Project Pegasus, which then, after this movie, still continues on with the Tesseract, that is what Nick Fury, the building they're in, which pulls Loki in the First Avenger, that is a culmination of Project Pegasus, where Erik Stålvag from Thor gets to mind control, gets to interact with the Tesseract.
Well, the only thing missing is at the end of Captain America First Avenger, Red Skull gets transported by the Tesseract. It,
of course, is the
Vormir.
Space Stone. So her powers, Captain Marvel's powers, along with Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch are all Tesseract-based.
No, they're coming from the Mind Stone.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Mind Stone. Yes.
Separate.
But her power is Tesseract-based.
I think it would be awesome if somebody took that audio clip and edited it to footage from all of those movies and put it on YouTube.
I can do it again.
That was the that was our version of Patton Oswalt and Parks and Rec talking about Thanos. Where's the Skrull is a question all of you. Who's the Skrull is the question all of you should be thinking about.
Why are you assuming that?
You should think about it because I'm right about this. Who is the Skrull?
You're saying in the Avengers.
Who is it?
Wow.
I think they're setting it up. My bet secret as we invasion. Sign off will be Maria Hill.
I think it's Widow. And outside chance, it's Tony gets replaced.
I don't think so. We'll yeah. place our bets now. We can talk and much more about Captain Marvel. I hope, hopefully you guys have seen it because we've spoiled half the movie. But we are done for this week. Unfortunately, I'll be out next week, but you guys are recording another episode. You can always follow us online. I got to jump off to a phone call. Do we have an outro?
Sure. Yeah, let's play this one. Mm-hmm. Here we go. By your Imperialist Rex.
Hi there. I didn't see you.
That's it.
It's actually quite dramatic, and it's super violent in this way that I found, you know, quite watchable.
That's it.
All right. Thanks for the recommendation, Kishore.
Fuck Batman. Captain Marvel's 11th on my list right now.
Ouch. That sounds bad, but you liked it.
I did.
There are 21 films.